You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Princeton Lacks Cash. Jerry Price joined, as always, by head coach Matt Matalon. I say as always, but we may try to shake things up the next couple of weeks, maybe bring a player or two in and see how that goes, if that's okay with you.
I think it'd be great. I'd love for the Tiger faithful to hear from our guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the one of the best things about Princeton and Princeton Athletics is that the athletes themselves are such great representatives of the school and such a great ambassador for the sport, and I think it'd be a good idea to hear from some of them.
Yeah, we've got a couple. We've got a great group of guys. I think that, you know, maybe starting with our captains and, you know, cycling through some of the upperclassmen would share some nice perspective on their experience at Princeton.
One piece of their experience at Princeton that is probably not going to leap to the front for them when they look back on their time here is last night at Rutgers, for many reasons. Princeton losing that game 16-11. You know, Rutgers, the number five team in the country. The game postponed for 24 hours, played in just brutal conditions. I don't want to make excuses because Rutgers is very good, but let's start with the weather. You know, is that the coldest game you've ever been a part of? Or
yeah, I'd have to say it was one of the coldest. You know, Rutgers, they did an awesome job in terms of their facilities and getting the field ready. You know, our guys, they were prepared for it. And to tell you the truth, the field was in great condition. It wasn't a frozen surface. The turf was nice. We ended up playing with orange balls for visibility reasons, and we were both playing in the same conditions. So,
how cold were you?
I had way too many layers on, so I ended up being all right. But as it shook out, you know, 16-11 loss, not a good day for us. Again, not to take anything away from a great Rutgers team, but, you know, we weren't able to put a good 60 minutes together. We struggled in some really important parts of the game, and it ended up biting us.
So let's talk a little bit about the specifics of that game. But before we do that, let's get into just playing Rutgers in general. So Princeton had beaten Rutgers 27 of the last 28 times before last night, which is, on the surface you say is very good because now you're dominating a rivalry, but I personally think that Princeton should play Rutgers every year from now until the end of the sport of lacrosse, if that's 1,000 years from now. But you also need that team to be good. So it doesn't help Princeton that Rutgers, if it doesn't help Princeton to simply beat Rutgers game after game after game. And I think it's good for the rivalry. I think it's good for New Jersey lacrosse. And I think it's good for Princeton's RPI and national standing to have Rutgers be a good team. And that's what they are now. So on the one hand, it's a better challenge each year, and it's most likely going to be a midweek challenge each year. But on the other hand, you know, it has the sense that it might become a pretty special rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, we're thrilled with, you know, the shape of the program that Rutgers has taken. I mean, since joining the Big Ten and since Brian Brecht has taken over that program, they've done a heck of a job getting a lot better. And, you know, 27 of the last 28, you know, it's just... you now see the parity in the sport of Division I lacrosse. So there are a lot of programs taking advantage of scholarships and doing a nice job, you know, putting great teams together. So, and you mentioned a midweek game. You know, I had actually spoken to Coach Brecht, and we were thinking about maybe moving it to a weekend and highlighting it as more of a local New Jersey lacrosse event and really market it to the local high schools and club teams and programs. Because it should be, you know, we hope that in the future it is two powerhouse programs in-state competing against one another.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good for lacrosse, and I think that's a great idea because New Jersey is a big area for lacrosse. There's a million kids playing. There's a lot of high school lacrosse players. You know, if you look, I don't know how closely you looked at their roster, but they don't have a lot of New Jersey guys on their team. You know, so I think that would help them. I think it would help Princeton, and, you know, just... when you play a team year after year after year and you're sort of locked into playing them just because they're so geographically close and because of the history and because you should play them, you need them to be a good competitor. And for a lot of that time, you know, it wasn't the case. So talking about the game specifically, not a lot of great things to dwell on from that game. But one thing I would say is the man-up unit was very good. And Rutgers came into the game, one of the top two or three teams in Division I in extra man or man down defense, and I thought the EMO was very good.
Yeah, they did a nice job early. Made a couple mental mistakes late in the game, but they, you know, I can't remember if it was the third and the fifth or the fourth and the fifth, but they got us back two crucial goals at crucial moments to keep us within one, you know, or to stop the bleeding at some point. So, yeah, they're doing a nice crew. We've got some good senior leadership with Currier and McBride running that group. So, you know, they're going to continue to do well and continue to grow.
And then talk a little bit about, you know, we talk about him every week. We don't want to ever, you know, put too much on him. But Michael Sowers, you know, three goals, two assists. He's third already in assists for freshmen in a season here. The only freshman who've ever had more assists in a season than Sowers. He's tied, actually, with Ambler and John Hess, which is good guys to be tied with. The only two freshmen who've ever had more assists in a season than he had are Kevin Lowe and Ryan Boyle. And he's already seventh in points. And he's only played six games, played less than half of the regular season.
We are thrilled anytime our current guys' names are mentioned alongside of those alums. So, yeah, we're thrilled. Michael's done an outstanding job. Again, he's doing it within the framework of our offense, which is impressive. He makes reads. He thinks the game at a high level.
What impresses me, I mean, honestly, I had never really seen him play much until he got here. I saw him play a little bit. Actually, the first time I ever saw him play was in fifth grade in the Crooked Cross Lower Bucks game on Mother's Day. But
sold out.
Lower Bucks won in overtime. Kid who scored the game-winning goal in that game plays at St. Joe's now. I hadn't seen him play much, and I knew about his reputation as a feeder. But what really impresses me is his ability to get open and finish in traffic on the crease, where you would think that would be the one place his size would really be a detriment.
I think that, you know, we saw it early when we were recruiting him, but a lot of that just falls back to the lacrosse IQ. I mean, him being able to move off ball. I think that as we go through this recruiting process with these young guys, it is very easy to see their talent with the ball when it's in their stick, when they're dodging, when they're shooting, when they're passing. It's tough when you're recruiting in the club circuit to see guys really play strategically off ball. So he's done a really nice job finding seams and playing off other guys as well. He's a really good, really good young player.
I'm talking a little bit about Austin Sims. He had come in off of back-to-back six-goal games and then scored twice last night, and you think to yourself, oh, he only had two. But then you think, you know, only had two, but he's a middie. And, you know, it just shows you where the level of expectation of him is, you know, now game after game. And I think he has made a major jump forward from where he was as a freshman to a sophomore to now, where, you know, a two-goal game is seen as, oh, he was quiet.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he was sitting right here, he'd be upset with himself. He probably said, I should have had five or six last night. You know, I think that he had some great opportunities that, you know, we weren't able to cash in on. But that's the beauty of this program, and that's the beauty of the guys we get to recruit. We get to recruit guys that are able to shoulder that load and expected to play at the highest level. So for Austin Sims, if an expectation, six goals a game, you know, he'll be ready to shoulder it. That's from now. Understand from a coaching staff, that is not our expectation. We're thrilled when it ends up like that.
No, my point is that, you know, he's a middy. Like, for a middy to get you two goals is pretty good. And, you know, to sit here and say, you know, oh, he only had two, and he, you know, you're right. I mean, he probably thought he could have had a few more last night. Just, I mean, you know, I don't want to get ahead of anything here, but I mean, he's moving into first team All-America territory, I think.
Hey, we hope. Look, we hope that we can just keep pushing forward as a program and keep winning games, keep producing offensively, keep getting better defensively, keep getting better all over the field, and then hopefully that these guys get recognized as they deserve.
Well, I mean, I think those things are connected. I think the level that he plays at brings your team to the level that you want to get to.
You're absolutely right.
I mean, you know, his shooting percentage, you know, it went down below 50% last night, but, you know, his shooting percentage going into that game was 51.9%, and, you know, how many of those shots were from within 10 yards of the goal? I mean, his shooting is extraordinary.
No, he's got some incredible range. He's able to stretch defense. He's able to step in and make some plays on extra man. So he does a really nice job. He's a really, really, you know, well-built kid, does a nice job in the weight room, and it helps him with that.
Let's talk a little bit about Currier. 10 more ground balls. It's the third time this year he's been in double figures in ground balls. I mean, he just picks up an extraordinary number of ground balls. Asking him to do a lot of things, he's faced off probably more than you want. His goal scoring had gone down until the one he scored last night. He has a lot of assists, but his goal scoring had gone down. But then the one he scored in the fourth quarter last night, that was an angry shot. you know, I mean, what are your concerns with him, and what are your, you know, what's your, what do you take for granted from him?
You know, no, no true concerns. I mean, you know, we use Courier in a spot, and we put him in the toughest grinding spots. I mean, we use him, you know, in terms of offensively, you know, whether it's running off picks, setting picks, playing the backside. We use him on extra man, and then we grind him out at the faceoff X. And he gives us something that most Division I teams don't have at the faceoff X. I don't think there's another guy in the country that faces off like him. So we use that to our advantage. Yes, does it wear him down? It does, but we're able to save his energy in other parts of the game. So sure, he's faced off a little more than we would like, but we've still got young guys developing at that position that hopefully will be able to take over some of the workload as we get down the stretch. But he's really impressive. I mean, and you mentioned it in terms of that last goal. You know, it was a very gritty play, and he brings that. He brings a level of intensity and competitiveness all day, every day, that kind of permeates through our program. So, I'd imagine he's fun to watch from the sideline as a coach. I could imagine as a spectator, he's different. So,
well, you can never take your eye off him. You know, and you can never take your eye off of certain guys. Like Sowers is a guy like that. Schreiber is a guy like that. But most of those kinds of guys that you never take your eye off of, it's because of what they're about to do with the ball in their stick. Where in his case, you can't take your eye off of him because of what he's going to do when he doesn't have the ball in his stick to get the ball back to his stick or to somebody else on his team. And, you know, and he just does this game after game after game. It just seems like he never gets tired. It's remarkable. I mean,
it truly is a level of relentlessness. I mean, he is, he's a savage when the ball's on the ground. And again, this is a young man that's used to playing lacrosse all year round. He leaves immediately from here and heads straight up to play junior A or senior A, elite level box lacrosse alongside of some of the NLL's best stars. So, you know, he then comes back, you know, a week or two late to school because he's playing, you know, deep into a playoff run with one of his teams. He comes right back in, takes a week off, you know, rests his body a little bit, and then he's right into the grind of our season. So this is not a grind. This is not new to Zach Courier. I mean, this is a young man that's been doing this for his entire life.
So, you know, Ed Calkins has been very good about emailing the link to our podcast out to the friends group, and we've invited them to ask questions, and a few people have gotten back to us, the favorite movie being one of them.
Yeah. We can surprise some people.
We can talk about favorite books if you want. What is your favorite book? Do you have a favorite book?
Favorite book, huh?
I tell you mine.
All right, tell me yours to start.
A Prayer for Owen Meany.
Okay.
John Irving, you ever read it?
I have not.
It's unbelievable that somebody could tell a story like that.
I would say, favorite, I've been on a trend. I mean, not surprising in terms of just coaching books and reading about other guys and their successes and their stories. I would say I just read Jay Billis's book about toughness, just a unique perspective on, you know, toughness within teams and how he defines it. I would say for fun, I read Scar Tissue recently, just about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. A pretty interesting book.
You ever read any of John McPhee's books?
I have a few of them. I've read a couple of them.
He writes these books that are so seemingly random, the subjects. And maybe my favorite book of his was The Founding Fish, which is the history of shad fishing. And, you know, what do I know about shad fishing? But it was a great book.
It's shocking. He's having him around our team is so incredible.
But anyway, so one question I got emailed to me, and don't want to pick on Tyler Blaisdell, who's obviously had a very good season and has had some great moments, but it was pulled against Quinnipiac and then put back in the game. And, you know, I mean, that's got to be a difficult choice to pull the goalie. Sometimes you have no choice. Sometimes the goalie's the only guy you can pull to sort of, you know, get the team going in a certain direction. It's almost like firing the manager at a certain point in baseball. You can't fire all the players, so you fire the manager. You pulled him, you put him back in. You were a goalie yourself. Like, what goes into that thought process?
So, actually, we don't look at it like that. We don't put the severity of pulling a goalie, as in pulling it, firing a manager, or we look at it like any other position. If somebody isn't producing at a certain level and we need to make a change, we will. Now, my perspective in terms of goaltending is, if a guy's not playing well, or he's not on, or he's lost focus for a minute, there's no harm in pulling him out. We have plenty other capable guys. Put in, catch your breath, regroup, and then if you can get back in there and rebound, I think that's a better way to approach how to pull goalies. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes it's just not your day, and you need to understand that at that point, it's our job and it's our profession to make sure we're setting our team up for success. So if we need to make a change, we're going to make a change, and we're not going to look back. And it's the mentality of our locker room of next man up. Anyone's going to be ready. Everyone's prepared for their opportunity. So I think in terms of the general thinking of lacrosse and pulling goalies, it does seem so severe. I'd like to think that the way I approach it is not that severe. You know, you're going to have the opportunity to go back in. You're not going to get crucified for one bad game. Everyone's allowed to have bad games here or there. So we just need to keep getting better. It's when guys stop getting better at their position that they end up losing their opportunity.
I mean, and look, Tyler's played outstanding all season. I mean, he's a, you know, team's 4-2. It's nationally ranked. I mean, it's a huge reason why he's up there with, you know, basically anybody we have. There are points of this season where, you know, maybe you look back at and see the final score. You know, like even the Hopkins game was 18-7, but if he wasn't on the way he was on in the beginning of the game, that game doesn't become 13-3. It becomes 13-12. And
there's no doubt. He's been awesome for us. He's made some really, really crucial saves when we've needed him to help us separate as a young team. And he's made a couple crucial saves down the stretch or even early on just to get us off to a good start. So we're really happy with Tyler's play. He's got to keep working on some things, and as does everyone in our program. So we're going to keep pushing him.
So Ivy opener is Saturday against Penn, 3 o'clock at Franklin Field. Very quick turnaround, quicker than it was supposed to be because of the weather delay of one day against Rutgers. You know, what have we seen from the league so far? You know, it's kind of weird. You've seen, just when you thought that's the team, something happens and you think, no, it's not that team, it's that team. And it seems to me it's pretty wide open going into it.
Hey, it's the beauty of the Ivy League every year. It's an absolute dogfight. We've got an incredible, you know, we've got, if you look at the Ivy League coaching staffs, you got incredible coaching staffs, you got great schools, clearly, great lacrosse programs, a lot of history. So this year is going to be interesting. You know, Penn was off to a hot start, Yale and Brown struggling a little bit, Harvard's finding their groove.
Cornell, they lost the game to Virginia, but they look like a completely different
team. Yeah, they were. They were a team that was struggling, putting up points. Then next thing you know, they hang double
18.
Digits, almost almost close to 20. So, you know, you can't sleep on any opponent in the Ivy League. We're excited to open up against Penn. We're excited to head down to Franklin Field. It's going to be a great competition.
You know, the game last year with Penn got away quickly, in much the same way that the Hopkins game did. And yet this year's Hopkins game was the complete reversal of that. So does the team take something from that, knowing that last year's result hasn't really mattered this year?
I don't know. I'm not sure guys dwell on last year. I think guys, you know, going into this game, you know, understand, you know, getting doubled up last year by an Ivy opponent, that hurts. And I think they'll take a little edge into this game, but it's not about anything but what's in front of you. So, you know, we're excited for the opportunity.
Penn has had some pretty good moments. I mean, even losing the game to Penn State, but that, you know, Penn State is now, I think, third this week. I mean, Big Ten is, you know, that's a real league right now.
Doing an outstanding job.
What's the biggest challenge of Penn? I mean, they seem to have a lot of guys who have experience. They seem to have a lot of guys who can score. Their goalie is very good. It seems like a complete team.
Yeah, they're really well coached, very athletic. They, you know, as much as they're struggling right now at the X, they face off, you know, with an athlete and a guy with offensive, you know, person, you know, an offensive middie. They ride well. Their systems are buttoned up. So, and they've got some big, long, rangy defensemen. It's gonna be a heck of a matchup.
That game is 3 o'clock on Saturday at Franklin Field. 3, right?
3 o'clock. Yep.
3 o'clock Saturday, Franklin Field. Followed up by a home game a week from tomorrow. That game is against Yale. That game can be seen on ESPNU. It's a 2 o'clock Friday start. ESPNU game. And the first two Ivy League games after that, it's Brown, and you get into the rest of the schedule there. But it's Penn on Saturday, and then Yale a week from Friday at Sherrod Field. Princeton looking to bounce back from the loss to Rutgers. Hopefully the weather cooperates a little bit more. And thank you for taking the time to be with us here this morning.
Hey, you bet. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers indeed. And we will be back. I will be back next Thursday with the next episode of the Princeton Laxcast. Maybe Coach Madeline. Maybe we'll have a player. Maybe we'll get into Coach Madeline's favorite music at some point later in the year. So anyway, it's Princeton Penn Saturday at 3. Ivy League Digital Network, WPRB, and appreciate everybody's support and everybody listening to our podcast. And we'll be back again next week. Thanks.